Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex blogger, a sex journalist, and I think negotiating kink scenes is like 30% of the fun of kink scenes. I was going to say half, but like, nah.
Who are you, friend? I'm at least half, if not slightly more. I like talking about kink. I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator and a blogger, and just got distracted by thinking about how fun negotiation is.
Yeah, that's going to be this whole episode. I'm excited.
Yeah.
Okay, so what is negotiation in a kink context? How would you define that?
It's the conversation that you have with your partner or partners where you decide what's on the table and what's not, or who's on the table, as it were, and what your plans are for the scene and what your boundaries are for the scene, and kind of create the space that your experience is going to exist within.
Mm-hmm. Good definition. Follow-up question. I feel like negotiation is talked about mostly in kink, but I wonder, like, if it would also be a useful tool for vanilla people, because I think that the reason why we do it more in kink is because, like, a lot of kink activities are more dangerous physically, mentally, emotionally, and also we don't have nearly as many cultural models for how they're supposed to go. So, like, most of us have encountered vanilla sex in many, many, many forms before we have it. So we feel like we don't really need to discuss it as much. But, like, in my experience, like, negotiating even vanilla scenes makes them better. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I have to negotiate before sex. I'm trans. So, like, I was actually just having this conversation recently with some other trans folks about how, like, when we hook up with trans folks, we, like, sit down and have the what do you call your body conversation, you know? Mm-hmm. What do you call your body? How do you like it to be touched? Great. And, like, we do it that fast, like, in between makeouts, and then move on. And, like, how we're the cis folks we hook up with only tend to have that skill if they've been hooking up with, like, a lot of trans folks. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, like, that's not as built into the culture, and I feel the same way about, like, kink negotiation, where, like, out of necessity, it becomes the norm, and mm-hmm. people who have never encountered it before don't think to do it. But I think it's valuable on any interaction. Like, I negotiate conversations I have.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'll say, you know, I want to have... This morning, I sent my partner a text that was like, hey, are you around for a minute to talk about this? And, like, negotiating if he had the bandwidth to have that specific conversation at that time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, when I hook up with, like, vanilla people who are attempting to get kinky, either for my benefit or just because they think it's, like, a fun novelty for that particular interaction, I find that often they do things that, like, a kinky person schooled in negotiation would not have done. Like, they might call me a slut without asking first if that's okay or stuff like that.
Yeah.
Where it's, like, they assume it's okay because they know that I'm kinky and they have a certain idea about what that might mean. But if they took the time to, like, ask a few questions, then they would learn that, like, I would prefer for them to check in about stuff like that. And that's kind of on me. Like, I think that I've like tried to get, like, vanilla people to negotiate before scenes sometimes. And I think that it sometimes opens their eyes, but it's like, it can be so foreign to them. Sometimes it's interesting.
How do you feel about folks who have, like, a standard pre-scene negotiation, whether it's, like, 3 questions or 10, they have these specific questions that they ask every partner before a scene, like, going into it?
I think it can be a really useful tool, and, like, there are a lot of people who put together, like, checklists or worksheets or yes-no-maybe sheets that are meant to be, like, structured negotiations like that, and I think that as long as they are relatively comprehensive, they are a good tool, but as with any kind of conversation, you need to be open to pursuing follow-up questions and going off map and tailoring the interaction to the specific people involved. Because if you're just asking this list of, like, 3 questions that you ask everybody, there's stuff that you might miss that might be relevant to just those people, but like, I got this checklist at a thing at the Playground Conference, which is, it's called a negotiation cheat sheet. I'll try to link it in the show notes if the link is still valid. But it's like a pretty comprehensive list of things that you should check in about before you do a kink scene. Like, it's like, how do we want to feel? Who do we want to play what role in a power exchange dynamic, if any? Physical injury and marks, emotional impact, social issues, level of experience, triggers, hard limits. There's like a whole list of things, and it's like, it's fairly comprehensive, but I feel like there's still things that like might be unique to particular people that might not come up through that kind of thing. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think like I've wanted to develop a like three or four question thing that is kind of my go-to, because every time I get in the moment, like we start talking and I'm like, but like at the same time, a lot of my negotiations are like built out of dirty talk and flirting that we already had and stuff, and it's like, oh, you mentioned this thing, like, how actually, like, a lot of my negotiation happens before, in, like, my flirting stages, and then I get right to the, like, pre-sex part, and I'm just like, so we talked about A, B, C, and D. How do you actually feel about those things? You know, like, right. And then, but I do find myself a lot of times, like, halfway into a scene, like, oh, damn, I want to choke this human, and we didn't talk about that, or, like, I want to do whatever, and I'm like, well, save that for next time, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting, because a lot of people say you shouldn't negotiate once the scene has started, because if you're already, like, in role, you don't have, like, the proper, like, mental and emotional tools to, like, deal with that conversation, and it might be coerced or it might be non-consensual, but, like, I've definitely had times when I've negotiated things mid-scene and it's been fine, but I think generally, like, especially with new partners, I probably wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah, I negotiate little things in scene, or, like, things that I'm like, oh, that's an obvious thing we should have talked about. Like, a lot of times I'll be playing with someone and be like, oh, we didn't even talk about, like, if penetration was cool. Or before the scene we said, you know, I don't know how I feel about penetration, just check in for that, or whatever. Because that's also a thing I do. Like, I'll say, you know, check in with me, we'll see how I'm feeling in the moment for XYZ thing. But there's only certain stuff I'll do that for. Because there are some things where I'm like, oh no, in the moment I won't be able to make that decision, you know?
Yeah, I think that flexibility is always really important for kink, and there's been like a lot of discourse, like especially since 50 Shades of Grey, about the idea of like a consent contract, which is really problematic, because it implies that like once you decide what you're doing, whether it's in like a consent contract or like a formal negotiation, that you like can't deviate from that, even if you're like not feeling that on the day, and that is like against the spirit of kink consent. And but, like, I'm also hearing a lot of people talking lately about how a consent contract can be good if it's, like, not set in stone, but it is instead just, like, a very clearly laid out list of, like, expectations and rules and protocols for a DS dynamic, but, like, leaves room for alterations as necessary. So I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, I can see, like, I like having things structured in that way, and, like, I can see the appeal of, like, the clarity of that communication, but it has to be, what appeals to me is less a contract and more a, like, best practices, you know, kind of guide, like, best practices for our relationship, you know, the care and maintenance of your partner kind of thing. Where it's like, here are some suggestions, here are some things that we both kind of agreed that we want to do. But, like, don't if you don't wanna. Good chat. Good talks. You now see me and my partner's negotiation in a nutshell. Here's the thing, but, like, you know.
So you mentioned about, like, flirting and sexting as negotiation, which I also do a lot of. I think it can be a really useful tool. How do you, if there's, like, a totally new thing that you want to try that you've, like, never talked about with your partner, how do you, like, bring that up as a thing that you want to do?
My go-to is to blame someone else, which I always, in nearly every workshop I do, I say, make me the bad guy. Because, I just pick another place where I saw this thing. And I'm like, I was looking at porn on Tumblr and saw this water sports thing and had some feelings about it. Or, like, saw this bondage thing. Can I show it to you? Or, like, whatever. And, or even just, like, it was really cool or it made me think a lot. And just kind of bounce it off them and see if you can get that conversation started. Or, you know, is that something you'd ever want to try? But I like to start by talking about something in theory before talking about something as it relates to us, because I think for some people it's a little bit easier. That said, you do run the risk of them reacting more harshly than they would if they knew it was something you were into, you know?
Right.
Winding up being, like, shamey or whatever. But I like to be like, hey, this piqued my interest. What you think?
Yeah, and you don't even have to ask it that directly if you're really shy. Like, I've occasionally been like, I saw this scene about this particular kink, and it gave me a lot of feelings. And, like, that gives the other person an opportunity to either be like, oh, really, tell me more, or maybe just kind of, like, skip over that, and I'm going to notice that signal and figure out what that means.
Yeah.
I also think we talked in our episode about sexting, like, way back in the day, about, like, offering someone a number of different options. Like, if you are telling someone you're gonna be their good little toy today, then maybe you could, like, list three things that you would like to do for them, like, you know, suck their cock, shine their boots, whatever. And they can kind of, like, pick whichever one of those is speaking to them most in that moment and go along that route. And that gives you information and also gives them choice in that interaction, and maybe you can, like, take that information later when you're negotiating an actual in-person scene.
Yeah, and I even do it, like, more subtly than that sometimes, where I'll just have a paragraph where two or three different things happen, like, they progress from one to the other, and, or they're happening simultaneously, like, you know, I'm sucking their cock while they're playing with mine, or whatever. And they will focus on the thing they want to talk about, which isn't necessarily a rejection of the other things, but it shows where their priority is in that moment and what really excites them in that moment, which can be a helpful thread to follow.
Yep.
I do that, one of my go-to negotiations, like, in scene, because I think it can be useful to talk about how that, what that can look like, too. Because sometimes it can look like pausing things and having a conversation in, like, your grown-up voices. About, am I the only one whose voice changes in kink? Because, like, no, that's absolutely
a 100%. Like, yeah,
I saw a meme where it's Spider-Man introducing himself to Doctor Strange, and he calls himself Peter, and Doctor Strange is like, "Oh, I'm Doctor Strange." He's like, "Oh, we're using our made-up names. I'm Spider-Man," and that is that is the kink scene in a nutshell, right? But anyway, so it can look like stepping out and being like, you know, hey, like, using your, like, street voices and everything and really talking about something. But it can also be, like, I've had moments where I've made someone ask for something they wanted, right? And as they're laying it out, as they're saying it, I'm taking that as consent, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, if someone asks for something that I'm not clear about, you get to be all toppy and be like, no, tell me. But when also you're being like, no, tell, I need a clarification. I am concerned. There was a lot of moaning I didn't really understand. I'm gonna need you to take that one for me again.
Yeah, one that comes up often for me is I'll often find myself saying please over and over again in a scene. And usually, like, I know what I'm asking for, and my dom usually kind of knows what I'm asking for, but sometimes they might check in and be like, please what? Which, again, is, like, a really dommy, toppy thing to say that, like, really puts me in a submissive headspace even more really quickly, but also gets me to, like, very explicitly say what I'm asking for, which is, like, embarrassing for me and makes me feel even more submissive.
Yeah, I get very, like, mumbly and just, like, stream of consciousness when I'm really subby, so I will just, like, be talking into a pillow, like, just filth, just filthy things pouring out of my mouth that don't go, they don't even go together. They're not sentences. And they're just mumbled into this pillow. And my partner, like, regularly has to be like, you're not making words, boy. Like, I need more from you than that. Like, try saying that again.
Talk to me about communicating limits and stuff, because I definitely find this trickier than talking about what I do want, because it's, like, less fun, but, I mean, obviously really important. So, like, an example is, like, I have a friend who likes being called a slut but not a whore, and stuff like that, where it's, like, yeah, you can just say that in the negotiation, but, like, it's really nerve-wracking sometimes. Do you have, like, tips for talking about limits?
I like to balance them with things that I want to do. Mm-hmm. 'Cause, like, ending a negotiation with, like, all of this stuff, and don't you dare touch my ass. Like, that is, like, a totally valid place. You can, that tells the person that that is the most important thing you said. Is, like, mm-hmm. the last thing you said, you're ending on that note. And mm-hmm. if that is that hard of a boundary for you, then fucking do that. Like, mm-hmm. if whatever your boundary is that intense, like, you can put it at the end and it can be, like, a big part of the conversation. But if, like, for me, I have stuff around gagging, where it's not gonna end a scene, but if I'm gagging, it's gonna take me a minute. Like, I might have to back off for a minute, or I might, like, I'm gonna feel negatively about that. Mm-hmm. So I, like, mention that in my negotiations, or I'll be like, you know, I really enjoy cocksucking. I have some feelings about gagging, so, like, maybe give me a second if that happens. But, like, I'd love to, you know, I'd love to be able to do that with you. Like, mm-hmm. I kind of balance them. Whereas it's something that I talk about along with all of the things I'm really excited to do with them. And also, I end it by saying, so, like, is there anything I should not do with you? Or is there anything you want off the table today? Mm-hmm. Because, again, like, I'm modeling that vulnerability and giving them space to offer that as well, which I think is also really helpful and shows that, like, this is a normal thing, that I expect everyone to have these limits, because it is a normal thing, and we expect everyone to have these limits.
Yeah, totally. I've also found it helpful occasionally to talk about why I have a particular limit, which is, like, a touchy thing, and, like, definitely not something you have to do, because, like, a lot of people have limits because of, like, past trauma or other stuff that they don't want to talk about with new partners and don't have to, necessarily. But for me, I found it helpful because it makes me feel like I'm softening it by explaining why it's, like, not personal to this particular person, or why and how that limit might change. So, like, for example, I might be like, I don't want you to touch my genitals today because I'm on my period, and that would make me feel weird because I don't know you super well, but that might change later down the road, depending on your feelings about that. Or, like, a one that came up for me recently is, like, I hate when people call me Katie. Like, it makes me feel belittled in a way that's, like, not fun for me. But I've told partners occasionally, like, if we develop, like, a really trusting dynamic, and if you check in a lot later, like, that might be an option, but, like, don't do that. Certain other words, I've had to tell people that. So, like, giving people a sense of, like, where you're coming from with your limits, for me, that's helpful, but, like, again, you totally do not have to do that.
Yeah, I find that super helpful when a limit is temporary, and, like, I know that.
Yeah.
Like, last time I was at Dark Odyssey, I was negotiating a foursome, as you do, and was like, alright, like, so I'm really down for, like, hand stuff, really down for blowjobs, down to get fisted today, I'm not down for butt stuff right now because I've been living on protein bars all weekend and we're at camp. And everyone on the bed went, yeah, sounds fair. I think same. Like, so sometimes it is useful to kind of be like, hey, this is, like, not right now. But then I've played with one of those people since then, because I have to drive to Maryland to meet people who live in New York. And I've played with them since then, and he was able to be like, so butt stuff. And I was like, oh yeah, today, great, sure. So communicating that it was, like, in the moment, there is a, like, specific reason why not today was super helpful.
Yeah. What are some things that people often forget to cover during negotiations? I definitely have some things that I constantly forget to do.
I'm really, like, I a lot of times forget to negotiate, like, the little things is what I always forget. Mm-hmm. The, like, oh, wait, can I call you a slut? Or, oh, wait, like, the singular words or the areas we can touch and that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. But, like, some of my favorite ones that I encounter a lot of people that, like, aren't used to or forget to mention are asking about, like you mentioned earlier, asking about how you want to feel in the scene.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think a lot of people are just like, we're going to do spanking today. And don't talk about if it's a humiliation scene or a, like, power exchange scene or an endurance scene or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, which is, like, a power exchange specific thing, but people not talking about what happens when this, or just, honestly, just in general, talking about what happens when the scene fails. What happens when you safe word? What does that look like? Or what happens when I give you a task and you don't complete it? Like, specifically giving tasks and talking about, like, all right, what is, you know, you'll, if you don't complete this, this is like a fun game and you'll get a fun punishment.
Mm-hmm.
Is helpful, other than, like, if you don't complete this, like, I had this conversation recently with my partner because in the past I've had times where I'm like, oh, if I don't complete this, I lose and the game's over. And like, no, it could just be like, if you complete this, you get a reward. Or if you don't complete this, the scene takes a turn and we do this other thing. Like, you don't have to roll out what the punishment is. It can be a surprise, but it can be helpful to maybe have a list of punishments that you both agree are fun and, like, good for you guys or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So yep. I think that's a super interesting thing because I had, like, a lot more fear around that because I never asked about it.
Mm. Yeah, makes sense. One that I always forget to ask about is marks. Because I love being marked, usually, I don't love being marked by, like, one night stands and, like, one off hookups because it makes me feel kind of shitty, but, in, like, ongoing things, I love being marked, and that's, like, so, fundamental to me that I often forget to mention it. But, like, for a lot of people, that's very important to negotiate that. You should always check in about that because, like, you don't know what this person has going on and, like, how they feel about that and who might be seeing their body in the next little while. So that's good to check in about. And names are really important. That's something that a lot of people forget to check in about, too, because, like, names can make different people feel different ways, and you don't want to, like, accidentally call someone a name that, like, an ex-partner used to call them that's going to give them weird feelings, or a name that just feels really gross to them for whatever reason. You want to check in about that. And then another thing,
specificity is where I have trouble. I'm good at asking the broad questions, but that level of specificity, I'm always like, ah, shit.
I think that's where sexting is really useful because it's much lower stakes in a way to, like, try on names and stuff via text. I personally feel less affected if somebody calls me the wrong thing in a text than I would if they did it in person, but that will vary. But, like, you know, if you call a person a certain name and they have a very strong positive reaction to it via text, or they just completely ignore it, then maybe that's negative. Like, that's all information that you can use when you hook up with them in person.
Yeah, absolutely.
People often also forget to negotiate aftercare because you're thinking about the scene, which is the fun part, and then you, like, forget that there's stuff that comes after. And it's also really easy to forget that other people might do aftercare in a way that's really different from how you do it. We've talked about that a lot on the show, different approaches to aftercare. I know myself well enough now to be able to communicate pretty quickly what kinds of things I need from aftercare and, like, how long I need someone to be there. What kinds of check-ins I need the day after or the next few days. But I often forget to tell people that. And then I'm in the position of, like, needing to try to communicate that while I'm in subspace sometimes, which is, like, really hard to do and not always very effective. And yeah, I'm trying to be better about negotiating that beforehand now.
Yeah. I also think it's really useful to make sure you're covering all of these questions from both people in the dynamic. I think it's really easy for it to look like the dominant interviewing the submissive about what the scene is going to look like. And that conversation needs to go both ways. And needs to, like, you want to make sure the dominant's needs are being met too. They're coming into the scene for a reason. And I think our scene is really good at looking at tops as, like, service providers, basically. Like, oh, you have this skill, so I just go to you and get this skill. And, like, they forget to kind of look at the ways in which kink serves dominance.
Yeah.
You just kind of assume, oh, they like doing the thing, so they'll always like doing the thing. And that's not what topping is necessarily about.
Yeah, I really like to spend a lot of time with new doms talking about, like, why do you like this thing? Like, why do you like hurting me or belittling me? Like, what specifically turns you on about that? How do you see yourself in that interaction? What kind of role do you like to play? What kinds of names do you like to be called? Whatever. Because that helps me get a better understanding of it. And sometimes you might find when you do that, that, like, a person's style of dominance is very different from your style of submission or vice versa. And sometimes that might be a deal breaker. And other times it might just be like, okay, so here's the, like, very limited slice of this Venn diagram where we can play together and everything else we're going to leave alone.
Yeah.
What are some of your favorite questions in general to ask during a negotiation?
I really like talking about the feelings and the language people use around their kink, because that's the stuff that fascinates me. And just talking about what gets them really excited. I also, another thing that I think people forget a lot, not to bring it back to that, but this is important. It's something that I learned from Midori, is to ask, what do you look like when you're having a good time, and what do you look like when something has gone wrong?
Yeah, yeah.
Because going in nonverbal can mean a lot of things, or, you know, talking a lot in the scene might mean you're not being able to get into a subspace, or it might mean that, like, you're nervous and uncomfortable. And talking about how to read your partner's body is really helpful.
Yeah, totally. I've had to explain to people what it looks like when I am getting more pain than I can handle, and that looks really different from person to person. And if you're a person who likes pain, then a lot of doms or tops will assume that, like, not a lot, but, like, some will assume that any expression of pain in your body or your face or your voice is a good thing and that they should keep going. And that's not great usually. So I like to, I mean, it takes a lot of self-awareness to be able to be like, here's what my body does when I am receiving too much pain, because sometimes you might be so out of your head that you actually don't notice that. But I know some things about my body. So I'm like, if my body's doing this particular thing, like, maybe check in, maybe back off a little bit. And that's, like, a process to learn those things and to be able to communicate them.
Yeah, that's the thing. One of the things I say is, in any kink scene, I go nonverbal pretty quickly if I'm feeling it. So it's really helpful for me to have people who will regularly ask me questions and keep me talking, keep me engaged. Not consistently, but semi-regularly. If I've stopped talking, check on me, because it could be a good thing, or it could be I'm trying to figure out how to adjust you a little to the left or something, you know, because I can speak up if things are a problem, but if things are in the middle ground, sometimes getting out of that, like, subspacey place to make small adjustments is a lot harder for me.
Totally. I also like to talk in negotiations about, like, specific mechanical sex things sometimes, because, like, when you get really excited about the kink stuff, the DS stuff, sometimes I forget to talk about the actual, like, mechanical sex things, like what I actually need to have an orgasm, whether I even want to have an orgasm in this particular scene, practical things like, do I need to have a vibrator at the ready, and stuff like that, like what kinds of stimulation get me off and whatnot, because, like, it can be really difficult to be in, for example, like a DS scene with a new person and realize that they're trying to make you come in a way that you don't come, and to try to find a way to, like, communicate from within subspace how you want things to change in order for that to happen. So, like, I try to communicate that stuff beforehand.
Yeah, I think that's really, really smart. I think also a lot of folks forget to talk about non-sexual kink. Like, they forget to negotiate if sex is going to be a part of their scene, because I think even people who are non-sexually kinky, like, sometimes forget that there are people who have sex and kink at the same time, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. Like, I know for you, spanking and sex don't go together. They can happen concurrently, but not consecutively. Yeah?
Consecutively, I mean, consecutively, but not concurrently.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes, exactly.
Words. whatever. But, yeah, so, I think discussing if sex is going to be a part of your scene and what that looks like is, like, a big thing, because I didn't, like, I often forget that. And then we get to a place where we're like, all right, I guess let's keep negotiating. Let's pause for a second and keep talking, because I want to do things with your junk.
How do you do that stop? How do you do that pause? Because that's something I feel really awkward about. And I think, like, if I was in, like, a long-term thing, there might be, like, an established way to do that, like a structured, specific tone of voice or hand signal or word or phrase that would communicate that. But, like, if you haven't negotiated that, like, is there a smooth way to do that?
I tend to bring the energy down a little bit and get to a point where, like, if it's an impact scene where they're not, like, actively hitting or whatever, like, you get to a point where the energy, you know, those little lulls in the energy where you're just kind of both peaceful and kind of in the same space, and just be like, so how do you feel about, you know, like, how do you feel about my hand on your bits? Like, is that, you know, do you want, and also you can say things like, you know, I'm wanting to do this thing. Do you feel good about that, or do you want to keep doing this other thing? Because also giving them that other option can be really helpful instead of just saying... Because if you just say, hey, do you want to do this, it can feel like saying no ends all of the things. So creating space to be like, this scene will continue. Mm-hmm. But also, how do you feel about adding in this other thing?
Yeah, I love that as a consent and communication tool, even outside of sexual situations, because it does make people feel a lot less pressured. So, like, I might be like, if I'm having, like, a conversation with someone via text, I might be like, hey, do you want to talk on the phone about this, or would you prefer to keep talking via text? Or, like, we could go for coffee, or we could go to this other restaurant, whatever. Because if you just are like, should we go for coffee? Like, I feel like people often, like you said, like, feel that if they say no to that, that they're, like, shutting something down, or that they need to, like, quickly come up with another option. So for sex things, also, it can be really good to be like, here's a bunch of options, and all of them are, like, equally valid, and I'm not going to get mad at you if you choose one over the other.
Yeah, and, like, to include something that you both already know is safe.
Yeah.
Safe in that, like, you've both already agreed to it, you both enjoy it, that sort of thing. So including that kind of option can really be helpful. I was just going to compare it to your safe school during your college applications, but that's rude because no one wants to go to their safe school. That's not what I mean.
Another tool I use a lot for, like, stopping the action during a scene to, like, pause and renegotiate something, as a submissive person, like, it's often really, really hard for me to do that because I feel like I don't want to disrupt the power dynamic of the scene. So sometimes I might say the person's honorific so that I get their attention, and then they'll ask me what, and I'll say, I have something I need to say to you, but I'm nervous about it, or, like, I need to tell you something, or whatever. And if they're, like, a good dom or top, then they will pause what they're doing and be patient and wait for you to be able to say that thing. I find that setting it up like that, even if it's a relatively small thing, like an adjustment of their hand or whatever, like setting it up like that, it helps me feel like I can take that breath and take that moment, and it gives them the opportunity to show me that they do want to hear what I have to say, which is helpful for me in that submissive headspace.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I kind of precedent with, like, I need to be asked things.
Yeah.
Like, and, like, I don't mean to do that in a way that's putting all the responsibility on the dominant. I say it more in a way that, like, checking in semi-consistently is helpful, because I'll find myself nonverbal a lot of times. And again, if something is mm-hmm. important enough, I will speak up. But if I'm just trying to upgrade our scene and be like, gosh, this is great, and it would be better if, those are things that I find it harder to speak up about.
Yeah, totally. I need you here tonight. This episode of the Dildorks is sponsored by Peep Show Toys, a great sex toy shop online that everything they carry is body safe. They don't carry any TPR, TPE, or jelly toys. All of their lubes do not contain propylene glycol. Their selection is really impressive. One toy I want to particularly highlight and talk about today that they carry is the Knob Essence Seduction, which is this incredible wooden G-spot dildo. I like G-spot stimulation. I don't think I really loved it until I encountered the Seduction and started using it, because it's just intense in a way that's a little bit unlike anything else I've ever tried. And it's also wood, so it's beautiful. All the wood toys are like one of a kind because the grain is different from wood to wood. It's this toy fucking makes me squirt every time I use it, practically. It's kind of a miracle worker. What is a toy you like from Peep Show?
I picked out the Uncut number one, which is the bigger Uncut. So y'all know I'm ridiculous. So this is my favorite butt toy because... So what I was gonna say is it's my favorite butt toy because it's, like, relatively slender and long, and then that is 100% by my standards. It is not slender at all. It's, like, 1.75 in diameter. but... Comparatively, when I'm usually using something 2 inches or bigger, especially for, like, front hole stuff, that's, like, the perfect size and shape for me as a butt toy, especially for DP stuff. And I actually, I really enjoy the length regardless, because I'd rather have a longer toy so that I have more to hang on to outside of my body. But right. The length on that one actually made me really enjoy, like, deep penetration with butt stuff, which is not something that had appealed to me before, and it was really cool to, like, find that out with this one.
Cool. Interesting.
Yeah.
So you can get both those toys or anything else on the Peep Show website for 10% off using our coupon code DILDORKS. So go to peepshowtoys.com, check out their great selection of body-safe toys, and type in that coupon code DILDORKS, DILDORKS, to get 10% off site-wide. Thank you. Fuck That and Fuck Yeah is our segment where we talk about something we hate and something we love, and this week we're talking about negotiation. What is your Fuck That?
My Fuck That is people who think what are you into is negotiation. Like, you need more than that, and you need, like, you... dudes on Tinder. That's who I'm talking about. I don't know why I'm not. It's dudes on Tinder who are like, who will say, what are you into? And then just kind of leave it at that. And I'm like, I don't know. Lots of things. Like, a lot. I can't write it all here. Or who will balk entirely at any discussion beyond that. Like, they'll say, I'll be like, what are you looking to do? And they're like, sex. I'm like, great. I like doing these things when I have... I said it to one person, I was like, I like doing these things when I have sex, and they were like, whoa, that's a lot. I wasn't ready for this. And I was like, you weren't ready to talk about the thing you wanted to do? Then I don't know how far you expected to get. What's your Fuck That?
Yeah, yikes. My Fuck That is when you forget to negotiate time constraints, which is... really easy to forget, because, like, it's really easy to get into a kink scene and just, like, forget that time is passing and that there's other things going on in the world. And then you might be in a situation where, like, you're late to the next thing you have to do, or you, like, have to rush to it, which is not great, because it might mean that you have to skip aftercare, and then you're, like, going into your next thing all, like, spacey and sad or whatever. So I like to talk beforehand about, like, here's the next thing I have to be at and the time that I have to be at it by, and maybe put that on the dom to, like, manage that time if they think that they're going to be able to do that. And if we're doing something really intense where we think that we both might lose track of time, then I like to try to do that at a time when I don't have to worry about other things happening for, like, a long time, or maybe until the next day, which is not always possible, but it's nice when it is.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'm really bad at doing that, too.
It's so hard. I've had to, like, go to, like, improv shows and, like, other things, like, that I had pre-planned, like, all spacey, and it's just, it's really weird and not good for the brain. Yeah. What's your fuck yeah?
My fuck yeah is Dark Odyssey Fusion, because I get to go this year, and I'm teaching, and I'm super excited. I haven't been, I mean, Dark Odyssey, like many kink events, has its stuff that's not great, but I haven't taught at a kink-exclusive event yet at all, and I'm really excited to do that. And one of the things I'm teaching there is communication and negotiation for nerds and pervs. So I'm going to have a resource there with a ton of negotiation questions for you to go through and pick the ones that are really relevant to what the kind of scene you're trying to create, and we're going to talk about, like, how to initiate that conversation and all kinds of fun stuff. That's, like, honestly, that's the one I'm most excited about, because I'm a nerd. I'm also doing a workshop on power dynamics in long-distance relationships. I'm doing G-spots and vajaculation, which is a trans-inclusive G-spot workshop. And I'm doing my blowjob workshop, which I just adore and love getting to teach.
It's so great. Everyone should come see you teach, because you're fantastic.
So that's all going to be at Dark Odyssey, which is June 19th through 25th. All of the information for that, if you're interested in coming out and seeing any of those workshops and all the other cool stuff going on, and just playing in the dungeon, which is great. That's at darkodyssey.com/fusion. What's your fuck yeah?
My fuck yeah is how sometimes it can be nice to go into a scene not entirely knowing what you want out of it or what you think you're going to get out of it. And to be okay with, like, figuring that out together. And this is something that I would probably only do with someone I knew pretty well and trusted a lot and had a fair amount of kink experience with. Because, you know, it's scary to do that with someone you don't know very well. But, like, I just did my first boot blacking scene the other day, and me and my partner had, like, sexted about it a lot beforehand and, like, talked about it a lot. But, like, right before we were about to do it, he was like, so, like, what are your expectations from this? Or, like, what are you hoping to get out of it? And I thought about it, and I was like, I actually don't really know. Like, I've never done this before. I know what I think might happen and how I think I might feel, but I'm interested in it partly because I don't entirely know what's going to happen and how I'm going to feel about it. And he kind of said he was thinking the same thing. So then we did it, and then we talked a lot about it afterward, about, like, how it made us feel and which parts were our favorites and what parts we would want to do more of if we did it again. And it was really cool because, like, we learned some new kink things about ourselves, and we were able to do that because we stayed open-minded about it. And it was interesting.
Yeah, that's really awesome. I think that can be really fun, and I've definitely had scenes that went in ways that, like, I didn't expect.
Mm-hmm. Kink is magical. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Dildorks. I have been Kate Sloan. You can find my sex blog at girlyjuice.net and the rest of my writing at katewritesaboutsex.com. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice. Where's your stuff?
I'm Bex. You can find me at BexTalkSex on Twitter and Instagram, and all my writing at BexTalkSex.com. Together we're the Dildorks. We're at the Dildorks on Twitter and Instagram, and at thedildorks.com. You can also find us by searching the Dildorks in your favorite podcast app. Tweet at us this week and tell us your favorite negotiation question, and that's at the Dildorks on Twitter. I need to up my repertoire. If you want to support us, you can go to patreon.com/thedildorks and toss us a few bucks to keep us doing what we're doing. And you can get some rad rewards in exchange for that. That's patreon.com/thedildorks.
Thank you so much. Thank you also to Protodome for the use of our theme song, I Want You in My Bedroom, which is off his album Chip Funk, which you can find at protodome.bandcamp.com. Thank you, as always, to Amy, who did our logo for us. She is at starboots_ on Twitter. And thank you to Peep Show Toys for sponsoring this episode. Their website is peepshowtoys.com, and you can use our coupon code DILDORKS to get 10% off site-wide. And, as always, thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life.
Bye.